Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello folks, you're all very welcome back to the Celtic Soul Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in and for listening to us over the past couple of years. And today on the show, I'll be joined by Frank Trundle. Now, Frank Trundle may not be known to many, but his life story is quite unique. And I've been trying to get Frank on the podcast for a number of years now. And he always said he'd come on when he retired. And he has now retired because I'm seeing a lot more of him at Celtic Park where he sits close to me in the stadium, and I always have great chats with Frank, so it's great to have him on the podcast. Frank Trundle, thank you so much for coming into the studio. You're very welcome to the Celtic Soul Podcast.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good stuff, Frank. If you could just bring that mic a bit closer to you. That's good stuff.
Okay.
Frank, where do we start with you? The quiet man that goes to see Celtic with us, a member of St Margaret's Celtic Supporters Club, the opposite to Hilly, who sits at the table with us in Celtic Park. He's another quiet guy, but not as quiet as you. Frank, have you been enjoying this season so far? Because last year you were the level head among us all when everything was going tits up around us. You kept the head cool and said, look, we'll be back, and under Andrew Postecoglou, I think maybe we got back quicker than we thought we would.
True, yeah, I think so. People questioned the actual Ange when he first came, but I've always a policy, forget about social media and whatever and all the hype that goes with it. Just give the guy a chance, or anybody who puts the top on, give them a chance. I said, not everybody understands the pressure of having to win every game at Celtic or the history as such, but they have to learn quick enough.
And I suppose he brought in so many new players as well.
True, yeah. And some quality players, you know, some nice technically gifted players as well. You know, so, and it also introduced a lot of pace to the team as well, so which was something probably was lacking at times, you know.
And a great work rate.
Great work rate, yeah. Great. But, you know, in general now, I was lucky enough to go to the World Cup in Japan in 2002 and experience what it was like over there. We're there for, what, 2-3 weeks or such, you know. 2 weeks in Japan and a week in Korea, and the people in general are just first class. Recommend anybody, if you get a chance, go there, just experience it. They're so genuine and hardworking as such, and also the place was absolutely spotless. You wouldn't get a postage stamp on the ground.
Yeah, and Baz, one of my best pals, he lived over there for many years, and he says the word over there is respect.
Yeah, ultra. They learn it from the womb, simple as that. And I think that's why people, when they grow older, they're looked after. They're not discarded as such. Family looks after them. They grow and they look after the family during their course of their adolescence and their growth. But they're always looked after then and in the, you know, at the end of the day. And hopefully not. You won't get too much influence from the West to change that.
Yeah, I suppose a forced introduction to a Japanese player at Celtic Park was Shinsuke Nakamura, who was absolutely outstanding, probably Gordon Strachan's best signing.
Mm-hmm. True. Gifted player. You know, you got the ball. I mean, I remember the goal he scored against. Remember against Rangers? It was 25 yards or something.
Flying. What a goal, yeah.
Got a goal. I mean, it went in. I remember it was in the North Stand at the time and I saw it. You could see it all the way. The whole stadium just lifted before it hit the net because you knew it was going to end up in the back of the net. Yeah, he was gifted.
And that was the first time we saw the kind of influx of Japanese tourists. The first time we saw the Japanese flag and sailors outside the park.
Yeah.
And then we've had a, I suppose it's gone full circle now with the arrival of Ange from the Japanese league, where he won, and then the arrival first of Kyogo, who has been a sensation.
True. And hopefully now, as I said, next season he'll come on another level, because after all, they came from actually finishing a season in Japan, then travelling back and forward for their internationals, and then to have to play most games with Celtic, with the exception of being injured. Like, we'll see the best of them next year.
And has any other player stood out for you this year, apart from Kyogo?
I like most of the signings at the moment. Carter Vickers, then you've got Abada and Riley. I think they've all contributed. I mean, at the end of the day, Callum McGregor was the driving force. The guy hardly put a foot wrong. At least that's my opinion anyway. So. But no, I'd say most, all the go from what, 12 players was it? You know, and practically new team. And I was willing, you know, saying, like, this is transition. You know, hoping for the best. But then when we won the League Cup, and in the end of the day, you know, we were knocked out of the Cup because we didn't really turn up on that day, for whatever reason. You know, it wasn't our usual, we wouldn't play our usual intense game. I think if we played like when we beat them 3-0, it would have been all over in the first half. Like last weekend, it should have been over in the first half as well. You know, but I remember saying prior to the St. Johnstone game, I said, somebody is due a hiding. And I remember the last time I said that was, I met a guy, I was coming back from Spain, and I met a guy, and I can't remember his name, but he had done the walk to paradise from Sligo, the Wood of Walford, you know, in honour of Brother Walford. Is that going to be? In honour of Brother Walford. And I was talking to him, and we were chatting about, you know, the chances we missed. And I said, look, somebody's going to get a hiding. And I think it was actually St. Johnstone, I'm not sure. When I came back the following week, it was about 6 or 7 nil. You know, so, like, if we converted every chance, we're creating enough chances to win every game comfortably in the first half. And next year, I say, you'll see the best of them.
And you'll be back over on Saturday?
Yes, 10 to 7 flight.
When we take on Hearts, who I spoke to Matt McGlone earlier in the week on the podcast, and you know, Matt is of the opinion that when they came to Celtic Park, we dominated them each time this season. They are toured, so they're the next best.
Yeah.
They won't be afraid to put in a few tackles because there's people in that dugout who would be no friends to Celtic. And it could be a tough afternoon for us, but a tough lunchtime for us. But I think, Frank, if we get off to a good start and start creating chances, you know.
Well, it's like, I always believe that teams get a hit. They get a free hit on Celtic players. Because some of the early tackles go in that justify a yellow card, they get away with. So that gives them confidence. Maybe I'll hit them again. Because you're not, he goes, the Celtic player goes by him. The guy's not going to let him happen the second time. He'll take him out. And refs have got to watch this and be more, you know, in control of the game and not let the players such control it. But it's, I think we win. It might be close. Then again, it could very well be hammering, you know. It could very well hammer them. But look, the important thing is we play our game, we win the game.
Yeah.
And that's it. And, you know, it is what it is after that, you know.
And were you happy on Sunday with the, when we finished up that, we were still 6 points clear?
Yeah, well, I mean, it could have been 3, it could have been 6, it could have been 9. You know what I mean? In the end, but the thing is, to be honest with you, I don't enjoy Old Firm games, I don't want to use the word for Old Firm. I don't enjoy Rangers and Sefco games, let me put it that way. It's a stress. It's the week beforehand you're thinking about it. I try not to. The day of the game, you always, you know, think the worst for whatever reason. And I just don't enjoy those games. We'll have a 3-0 up at half time, we'll enjoy it, nightly, as I say, you know. But it is what it is, you know. So I'll just, hopefully now, we get, like, we're assuming that Rangers are not going to drop any points in their next 3 games. You know, it's over technically anyway. To be realistic, it's over if we win on Saturday. And providing this, the other 3 teams are not going to lay down and get beaten 6-0 each, you know.
Which has happened before.
It happens in the past, and it wasn't 7-0 or something they won, you know. Jesus. Anyway, we're not, look. See, Hearts have nothing really. Hearts are safe in third, and they have the cup final to look forward to. So that might be on the back of their minds. We don't want to get any injuries, so we'll see how it goes, you know.
Well, I'm going to take you back a bit further now, Frank, because I met you through Celtic. when you joined our club. I knew you through a friend as well. Where does, you know, you're a Dublin man of Belfast stock, and I think there's a bit of Meath stock in you there as well, Frank. Just take us back to, you know, your young days and, you know, how you started to follow Celtic.
Well, it was my dad. He was from Belfast, and he followed Belfast Celtic. And naturally enough, after I'd be Celtic. And I remember, I must have been about 10 or 12 or something like that. I'm 73 now, so I was about 10 or 12. I think it was
a bit of a Cliff Richard book.
60, 62. Around, I think it was about 1962. And I remember asking my dad, I said to him, how long am I a Celtic supporter? And he said, you were a Celtic supporter in your mother's womb. I'll always remember saying that. And he used to sing the songs to us. Now, I have four brothers. One is Man U, one is Liverpool, one is West Ham, probably dropped on his head. And the other one, it doesn't follow any, but has an interest in Celtic because he was the one we kind of was close enough, you know, to growing up, and we went out together and all that stuff, you know. And he doesn't follow anybody, but he would always kind of text me or WhatsApp me saying, oh, you had a good result today or whatever, you know, that type of thing. But three others, and you know something, none of them have ever left the country to see their team play.
Unlike you.
So they all thought I was mad and, you know, whatever. So, and also the politics will be on the other side of their thinking as well. So, but no, it was, that was the time. And I remember it was an uncle of mine, Jimmy, who was in Coventry, lived in Coventry. I think he did a little bit of, I haven't proof of this, but I heard he did a bit of scouting. And he wanted to bring me to the Lisbon 67 because he had tickets. And Dad says, you're doing your exams. That was it. Like, Dad put, being from Belfast, the importance of education was prime with him, you know. And but he went to go over in the boat, young, whatever. And then, naturally enough, when I started working, I was able to finance myself and still on the boat and used to go on my own. And I think I went, my nephew used to go and a few other friends. And then when you start flying, it was different, you know. But I met a few guys then. I tell you, so when it comes to, you know, we use the word family with Celtic, and people say, ah, family, just, you know, it's all that. Well, I'll give you an example. When my wife passed away, it was sudden. The amount of people that turned up for both the removal and who I didn't know, all I knew was from nodding, you know, how are you at the game, knew some of them only by nickname or first names. And individuals came. One guy came from Boston, another guy came from, two came from Scotland. All I knew them was from matches and sitting beside them or sitting in front of them in the North Stand at the time, you know. And they came, and the comfort of that, and, you know, it helped greatly because it was a shock. I mean, for 2 years after Brenda passed away, I used to suffer from panic attacks. I used to, couldn't breathe. The first one was the worst because I thought I was having a heart attack. And after that, then I just couldn't manage them. But that was the effect of apparently just finding her asleep. What I thought was just asleep. It wasn't. She had passed away a few hours earlier, you know. And but when you talk about family, that is, you know, an example of what family is, Celtic players. And anybody that I've met, most of my friends are true Celtic. And I have a good quality of life, as you know, Milish. You know, I can go do what I want when I want or whatever. I said, but between my son, who's in Australia, and Celtic supporting Celtic, and the people I met through them, enhanced the quality of life I have. And I wouldn't have it if I didn't have Celtic. Because I remember, I'll finish by saying, but one time I was down in Spain. You know where we are in Spain. You have a place in Spain as well. And I was sitting at the front, watching the sea. And this guy, and I had always had a Celtic colour on me, whether it's a polo knot or a T-shirt or whatever, you know. And I was sitting down there with my friend Anne, who you know as well. And she, we're sitting there, next minute this guy comes along and says, what's the score? And I think we played Hibs that day or something. I think we won 4-0 or something like that. And I said, we won. I said, oh, great, great. And we're chatting there. He was from Coatbridge. And we were chatting away there. And we're listening for an hour. We were just yapping. And Anne is a big Celtic supporter anyway, so it's not a problem, you know what I mean, to have somebody chatting to you, you know. But next minute, this girl comes over and she shouts, Mom, I found him. And apparently, he was over for a week with his daughters, the wife and three daughters. And he said, I had to just get away. He said, jeez. He said, it was too much female, he said. And they said, look, what they said, I told you, ma'am, just look for somebody with a Celtic top on him and Dad will sit beside him. And that was it. I mean, we had a great old chat and he went off then, they dragged him off and that was it. But kind of, you know, it broke up his day for him, you know. But that's what it is. Like, you'll always get Celtic supporters always recognise each other. You don't get that with Man U's or the Arsenal's or the Chelsea's. You won't get them. They'll probably end up fighting each other, you know. But we'll always recognise each other, whether it's come on the hoops, how you, whatever, good result, bad result, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I'm always happy to sit in your company, Frank, as well, and talk about Celtic, because you always have good stories, not just about Celtic, but about the whole, the more than 90 minutes of it. And and you've been a great supporter of the fans, Ian, and I thank you. And any charity stuff we do, you've always supported us. So I thank you on that as well. But you told me one time you were wearing a Celtic top, you were flying to Australia, and you were in lucky enough to be in the business class, and there was a bar on the plane, and you strolled up, and you said to me, once you wear a Celtic top, you'll get talking to someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the plane, it was the A380, and there's a bar at the end of it, you know, on the end of business class. I don't know whether it's on the other one, but at the end, just as you're going down to Lou, in fact, I was going down to Lou, I wasn't going down to the bar, and it was just a guy, come on the hoops, you know. And even the staff, there was one of the actual stewards on the plane came over and chatted to me because he was a Barca fan.
Right.
And he had actually been at one of the games in Celtic Park when we beat them 2-1 on the 125th anniversary. He was at that, and he said he could never ever experience an atmosphere such as. And he's been there back a few times since with his friends to bring them over for games that, you know, that we just pick a game, come over for the weekend to Glasgow. But things like, you know, you'll always get there's a great reputation of Celtic supporters, and it's true. Don't go away to wreck places. We go away, win, lose, or draw. You'll come home with a smile on your face.
Yeah, well, I think Seville was. I think Seville was proof of that. Mm. But I think the people of Seville, because we record this close enough to the Rangers playing in the semi-finals, second leg, and I'd say the people in Seville are praying that they don't get through, because if they've seen what they've done in Manchester.
Yeah. It's everywhere they go, and in Barca as well. They're throwing people into the pond. You know, where the memorialist to the freedom fighters, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's the Catalonia, and they were doing this. You know, just, and they're laughing. That's all they are. They're zombies. You know, they don't change. It's, you know, it's in their blood. You know, you see their comments they make. They're just vicious. You know, they're just pond scum. Sorry about that, but I have a few Rangers friends, believe it or not. They've never been to Ibrox, and they won't go. They just inherited it from their parents, you know.
Yeah. And Frank, you mentioned there earlier on education. Your dad wouldn't allow you to go to Lisbon because you were doing exams, right? Mm. And education is very important. But you did get educated. But the interest I have, and I always have, I'm always annoying you about. That's why I wanted you on the podcast, because you've told me a few stories, but you wouldn't tell me any stories till you retired. Because you were obviously, I suppose, it wouldn't have been right and proper, because you were, to put the stories public until you did retire. But you were an educated person. You qualified, what did you qualify as?
As an engineer, electronics.
An engineer. Yeah. But how does an engineer, now, if anyone knows Frank is not the biggest man in the world. He's a gentleman, he's softly spoken. So how does a softly spoken, Dublin, well-educated engineer become a bodyguard and a train killer?
Jesus, I get arrested on the way back. Hopefully then Satnav will lose me. What happened was I got laid off. And at the time, my late wife Brenda, she was working with Aer Lingus. And so we had one income coming in, which was okay. And I had a few bob then from being laid off. So it wasn't an immediate type of panic situation, right? And I always had an interest in science. And I was thinking, well, maybe I'll go back to college and, you know, do a degree in forensic science or something like that, you know. And, but like, we had Neil, he was in school. He was, we had the one income, which took care of the mortgage at the time and a few others, you know, but it wasn't going to last, you know. So I decided, like, a friend of mine did security, had a company at the time, and he looked after certain individuals. And I trained with him at the time. We trained together. And he said, would you be interested in doing it? And I said, no, I wouldn't know.
Sorry, friend, what were you training at?
At the time, it was Aikido. But it was mixture. Then I did a mixture with him, which is now MMA. And like it before became what it is to this day, you know, it was just boxing and kickboxing or whatever, but it was mostly just to keep fit. And he said, look, I have a few clients, he said, and I think, you know, you might be interested. So I said, look, I'll give it a try, because at this stage now, you know, the money was, you know, you know yourself, if nothing's coming in, stuff you have is going out twice as quick, you know. So anyway, I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And he made a call to me, and he said, the first individual was, he rang me, he said, Frank, would you meet me out in Fox Rock, Westminster Road in Fox Rock? And I said, fair enough. I went out into the house, and I said, and I hadn't a clue who it was, went in, and the first thing I saw was, the King James Bible on the counter. And I said, a big one, I know who this is. And at the time, Jerry Lee was reported to be in the country with his wife and his family and such. And apparently had brought security with him, but they didn't work out for whatever reason, and they were sent home. So I was asked if I would look after him. And I said, look, okay, I'll have a look and have a chat to him. And talking to Jerry at the time wasn't, you know, possible, because he wasn't in the best. But they asked me, so I said, look, eventually what they said was, I said, I'll go away and think about it. And that day I got a call, you know, saying, I was introduced to him saying that this is Frankie's going to look after you. And I hadn't read anything as such. But then that day I got a call from Ferguson. He said to me, Frank, would you take Jerry to Mexico City to open the Hard Rock Cafe? And I said, okay, all right, fair enough, I'll do it. And then I realised my passport was out of date, and I was going to Mexico in 2 days. Yeah. So I luckily, down to the cop shop, got the forms, got the photographs, got them signed, and into what was Molesworth Street at the time. I don't think you can use that place anymore. And I got it all done in a day, you know, because somebody knew somebody. So, and that was it. It doesn't work that way nowadays. So I went to Mexico with him. We went free. I think it was Heathrow, then on to Atlanta, and then on to Mexico City. And I remember booking into this hotel, a beautiful hotel, and the first thing I noticed was a lot of armed guards. And I said, Jesus, you know, are you in Cartelville, you know what I mean? So, you know, and I said, but it turned out that the actual Chinese premier was staying there for some reason, and he had taken over the top floor. And so, on one of the cases, I went up and got off at the wrong floor, and next minute I was met with this one throwing shapes. And then seeking Chinese to me, and I said, take it easy, have a chill pill, you know what I mean, what's the problem? And I was just on the wrong floor, so I said, oh, I'm on five, it's just six, no problem, I'll go down, you know. So they were, that was it. But I remember going to the Hard Rock Cafe was 5 minutes walk from the hotel, and we had to have a limo, and the limo took half an hour, because everybody had to have a limo, and we shared it with Huey Lewis. Remember Louis Hughes in the news?
Yeah,
absolute gentleman, very nice guy he was. And I said, well, why, you know, can we not get out and walk? He says, no, it's not safe. Even though we were in what I think was called the stockbroker belt, it doesn't matter. You could get, you know, snatched or whatever, you know. So you had to be in the limo. And that was it. He disclosed the show. So he did a few numbers and whatever, and went down very well, and came back to the hotel. And the following day then, we were to fly home. And everything went fine. Just got home. I was a bit knackered because I had no sleep. We left on Thursday and was back home on a Sunday. You know, the kind of thing. So, and he slept. I didn't. And so I said, I thought that was it. And I left it. I came home. Went to my own labba. And a few days later, then I got another call to say, would I be interested in looking after him? And so I went from there. We had some very good, got to know the guy. Hell of a nice guy. Some individuals associated him weren't exactly, you know, you wouldn't be calling your friends and such, but that was it for another day. And so I went to a number of trips with him. Probably the most notable would have been Brazil for a couple of weeks, Brazil, São Paulo and Rio. And he did some very good shows there, did an extra show because he's very popular over there, believe it or not. The thing with Jerry is he has a unique sound. You could put half a dozen piano players up there, rock and roll piano players, all playing Jerry Lee tunes. And he could be in the middle, and you would pick him out. The rest of them are just, they're basically copying. They're not unique. He is unique. The guy is self-taught. He learned the hard way. And his upbringing, you know, was tough. They were poor dirt farmers to a degree where they picked cotton, which is untold for white people to do in the South. And his mother actually, they sold the house, I think it was, because they were coming to reclaim the piano he had. And she said, no, my son is born to play piano and take the house. And that's what they did. And they lived in whatever else after that. And when he got his first hit, I think he got his first big hits was Rick Balls of Fire and a Whole Lot of Shaking, I think it was, in the mid-50s. And he went out and bought cars for everybody, Cadillacs. And the funny thing was, he bought a car for his dad, and his dad totaled it the first night. and he went home, outside his house. So he actually rang up the dealer. He said, "I want the exact car delivered now." And the guy was only too glad. Opened up the dealership, drove the car down. The next morning, the father woke up sheepishly, thinking, what's going to happen? Looked outside and thought it was a bad dream. You know, never to the day he died did he tell him that he totaled the car and he bought him a new one. Like, money was unreal. You know, I mean, it was just from nothing to having a crap load of money.
So, to give up your house for a piano.
Yeah.
That just goes to show how much money.
He learned by listening to the African-American players, underneath. He was in the table in these speakeasies. And the owner would say, "Jerry, go home. If they find you here, they'll burn me out." And he'd be under the seat listening to the guys. He could play rock and roll and boogie woogie on the same piano at the same time, one end or the other, you know.
And most, like, I think of Jerry Lee, I think of, like, the madness, you know, the performer, the madness of him. And you said, like, you just hit it off, but there was a few other people in the group that maybe were there for Jerry's Bob.
Yeah, well, that was always, you're talking about rock and roll, you're talking about madness. I mean, Jerry had a plane, was one of the, I think it may be Dakota, you know, the turboprop jobs. And I remember a story was told, and I believe it. They used to land in these two-bit towns, and it'd be like a one-street town. The plane would land and go tuck, 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 you know, trottle through the town. And they'd hop off it and go into a bar and have a few jars, thrash the bar, and leg it out and onto the plane and take off. I mean, that was a fact. And I remember he was going across the desert one time, and he looked down, this truck was going faster, and he said, "This is going faster than my plane. I want a jet." And he got sold that, got himself a jet.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And I think he sold the plane to Buddy Holly. I knew what happened after us. Too long later, he flew into a mountain. But they used to have mills. I mean, on the jet, he had I don't know whether he owned it or leased it or whatever. He had a Learjet, and he'd have a fight on it. And his lead guitarist, there's a guy called Kenny Lovelace. And now Jerry's, I think, is 85 this year, or last year, 85. And Kenny Lovelace is 84. Cousins, first cousins. Kenny, I think, was an ex-Marine. But he is his lead guitarist, still to this day. And he'd be strumming away there, you know, and he plays rock and roll fiddle. Very, very great player. But he won't have him jumping up and down stage. He's just there in that one position he's playing, you know. You think he's in his front room. And I remember one time, Jerry was getting heavy with him or something like that, and your man became a boot in the mouth and broke his nose. And if he ever gets a belt in the nose again, he'll lose his voice. Apparently, it'll affect his septum or whatever, you know, whatever it does, you know. And so you have to don't hit Jerry in the nose if you have to. I was kept that in mind. I said, if he fucks with me, excuse the French, that's when I'm going to hit him first. But there were some stories that But Brazil,
it's fascinating. Now you were with him. Obviously, at that time, Jerry was in and out of Dublin quite regularly. Because I think if memory serves me right, he played the Olympia Theatre.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he played.
Must have been some concert.
Yeah, and he played. Then he did a thank you to for his promoter here. He did a thank you for his promoter. I can't think of the guy's name in Wexford Street. You know Wexford. What was the name of the place in Wexford Street?
The Wexford Inn.
It might be the Wexford
Whelan's.
Inn. Whelan's. Yeah, and that was packed. Well, I tell you, I remember doing an impromptu in a pub out in Dunleary, near Dunleary, and it was, who's the guy that owns? He owns a pub, the Marion Inn, two brothers. Well, you couldn't get parking. The word went out. And he only went in to play and start playing the piano. He was in for, just a beer, in the piano, playing the piano. And the place was jammers, like that.
Yeah, well, see the rock and roll legend,
But he's just more like, remember Bruce Springsteen saying, he's responsible. He was responsible for him and his music. You know, so a lot easy. He used to lay down the, a lot of people were influenced by him, as such, you know, and self-taught individual.
Now tell me, Did you go to the deep south with him?
Yeah, well, he lived off the Malone Road in Nesbitt, Mississippi, and it was you could see luxury and you could see absolute just devastation. You were talking about tin huts, you know, that's the difference. The difference in the structure down there as such. But I remember I'll give you the laugh. It was one house we passed not far from him, and he had these big columns to have down the south. These houses, a big house, and he said, see, that's the way it's different there. Different. He said, well, I was coming home one morning at 8 o'clock, and he was in a, I can't think, he won a sports car of some sort. And he said, he came over Humpback Bridge and took off and landed in your man's front room, demolished the place, you know. And he introduced me to the guy, and he said, remember that? Yeah, Jerry, you dropped in one morning for breakfast. Yeah, no problem. And you said to me, just send me the bill. And he got out of the car and waddled off. He just down the road to his own ranch and into bed, you know. But he said, I fell asleep, he said, probably at the wheel, woke up at the wrong time. But it was...
Was it a culture shock for you?
Because I tell you why, that and Brazil was a culture shock. How the poverty, Jesus, we have poverty here, let's face it. But over there, we're talking with people in Brazil who didn't have clothes to wear, and they're called the night people. They just come out, and they're living literally in probably the sewers. You know, it was hard to, you know, and I'm in a 5-star hotel, and we'd come out in the morning, go down for breakfast, and everything's laid there. And you just have a little bit to eat. You just couldn't eat what was there. You don't have to. It was just too luxury. And I remember there was a guy outside the hotel and he used to sell juice, and it was 50 cents for a liter of the best juice you could get. You know, he'd do it there and then, all the fruits. And we used to come out, and I used to tell the guys, the band, because the group he had was Robbie Brennan, who's on drums, Irish guy, and Paul Ashford, who fortunately Paul has passed away. He was bass guitar. Then there was Kenny Lovelace on his lead guitar. And then there was another guy, I can't remember his name. He was our sax player. He's a young guy. He was a brilliant sax player. I think he did stuff with Van Morrison and a few others after Jerry Lee, you know. But I used to say to guys, look, they've got about a litre, he said, of the best juice, all the Brazilian juices out of the rainforest nearly, you know. And I said, it's $5, because we were on expenses, you know. $5, yeah. I said, give them. And I said, sure, I told you, man, cover up that 50 cent job, will you? So your man, he nearly called the name his next 10 kids after me. He was crying when we were leaving. Every morning we come out, give him $5, and $5 each. So you get $25 a pop, you know, for juice that he...
Which was a lot to him.
Which he was only he was getting 10 times the price, you know. It's like selling 50 freaking yolks at 50 cents or something like that, you know. But it was just... The poverty was unreal. I mean, I was told by our we had an interpreter, a very nice girl called Malu Kumo. She looked after us well. And she said, Frank, don't wear those runners or those sneakers. And I think there was Nike at the time or something like that. We didn't think twice about them. Come on, I'll bring you down to markets. And she got, wear the clothes they wear on the beach. Because she said, people are not bad, but those sneakers of yours is a meal for a week.
Yeah,
you know, and I said, you know, that's the thing, and you see hands coming out from the dark looking for something, you know, and so you either had it or you didn't have it, you know, and then and people in between with that were just kind of striving to do this, because I was brought to the favelas, you know, they were the, and because I remember asking Malu, I said, Malu, did you hear these boom, you know, booms going off, and I thought it was like something you'd hear in the farm, you know, like chasing off the birds, the crows. And she said, no, she said, that's just, believe it or not, she said, the death squad's going in. And when it rains, they set off the charges above the hills. And the whole idea is to bury people. You know, that's it. She said, they don't arrest people as such. I mean, they can't go. The fellas are run by the drug barons, you know. But the whole idea was, she said, to bury people. And I said, you serious? She said, no, that won't get anything in your papers. She said, it might get that much, she said. And she did about, you know, half an inch with her fingers. She said, because you'll only give out what the weather and the, we're not burning our rainforest. She said, it's big business that burns our rainforest, backed up by armies. Backed up, you know, by, you know, so it was an eye opener, you know?
Yeah, certainly sounds. And like, there has to be, like, when we think of Jerry Lee, we think of madness. We, you know, all these stories of, was he as mad as he's made out to be?
Well, I only had one instance where you could say it was probably, you know, a bit off the cuff. But anyway, we were in Brazil, time we were in Brazil, and he's gone to bed, and during the course of the night, maybe 2 a.m, I heard a scream, and just look out the door. So he had a suite, and I had a suite right beside each other. In fact, you could have had one person, everybody could have been in the one damn suite, you know, we didn't have to have one each. And I walked out, and there's just one in the Blue Rinse Brigade, you know, running up and down the thing saying, "Mad, mad, madman." And I'm looking around, here's Jerry, and he has a bandana with a feather in it. He has his ribs strapped with a fucking sheet, and he's there standing in his jocks and his cowboy boots, and he's got this bloody stick, with a voodoo stick he obviously got from somebody, you know, when he's out and about, you know, as a gift. And he's standing there like that, and I said, "Jeez, Jerry, what's up?" Apparently he cracked his ribs, and I thought he was having me on at the time, and I said, "Look, I'll give you, he wants, you know, Demerol or something like that." And I said, "No, Jerry, you don't need that stuff." I said, "Paracetamol is the top thing now." You know, so I gave him a couple of paracetamols. But apparently the ribs are cracked anyway. And of course, the worst thing you do is put a sheet around to tie them, because, you know, they don't knit. And I went into the room, and there's all these candles burning on the telly and on the furniture, and then there's a few bits and pieces broken, lights and that. And I said, "Oh, mother of God, this is all we need," you know. So I said, I rang the promoter, said, "Get up here," and he nearly wet himself. And I said, "Look, we'll sort this out, don't worry about it." So get rid of the candles, get rid of the broken vase and all that kind of thing. And of course, the telly had wax run down the front of it, so chip it away. But we were going, but this is San Paulo, yeah, this is Rio, sorry. So the following morning, we were going back to San Paulo, and because they asked him to do another show, otherwise, he would have been flying back from Rio, be out of the country. So got out, everything's okay, checked out. Yes, thank you for staying and all this stuff, you know. And we got back to, I said, "Okay, we're out of here," right? It was only an hour's flight to back to Rio, out to San Paulo. And arrived at the airport, and here's the cops waiting. "Mr. Lewis, can we have your chat?" You know, this guy there in his uniform. And I said, "Oh, Christ, here to go." Gives him, hands him a bill, hands him a scribbled note, $3,000. And I said, "What's that?" He hands me, "What's that?" And he says, "For damages. Antique vase, you know, cleaning, antique television." I said, "Well, the telly was antique. It was about 30 years old. I would agree with you." Said, "But that's what the vase," I said. "It's only short of saying you could buy it in pennies." But anyway, so just paid him the money. You know, you don't argue. And there's dollars, not real. Real, as they call it, because it's worth nothing. You know, they like to be paid. And I said, "Can I have a receipt? I have no paper. I have no pen." So I said, "Look, forget it. We get out of here, do the show." And the following day, then we flew to back home, you know. But we had a few words that night when he wouldn't move. And I said, "Jerry, look, there's three ways off this. We're on the ninth floor," I said, "Jerry. There's three ways out of this place." He says, "The lift, you're not getting that. It's the stairs, you're not taking those." I said, "The alternative is you better know how to fly." And he said to me, "The last person to speak to me like that was my daddy." So that was it. So we got on well. You know, we learned.
Any scary moments with him?
No, not really, no. No, I can't say I did, you know.
He never wanted to drive the car, no?
Oh, no. Well, there was one time he did, yeah. But that was, he wanted, and he went in, we're going down to studio, and guy hops on the top of it and chops in through the thing, you know, with a machete. And he said, "Ooh." So we just got out of the place, you know. I had to show how he showed me sixth shooter. But he said, "The next time, Frank, I'll let you drive." You know,
I know that you told me before that, you know, you would have to go to France to get your arms licenses. But
I did. When I was going to do these things, it was necessary to, you know, maybe get the proper type of training as such in relation to one-on-one situations or in a team of three or four or whatever, you know. And I did stuff in Wales, and then we had to go to France for firearms training, you know. France for firearms training and such. Never had to use it. See, you couldn't do, because I think it was after Dunblane, you couldn't do anything here or in England or such. I didn't. But I'm totally anti-gun anyway. And I said, I don't need to look after someone. They thought that was strange in the States. You know, I think, like most of the States, guys were all gung-ho. You know, they're either ex-army or ex-something or other or whatever, you know. And they're all used to, you know, battering people. And for someone to come and say, talk to someone and talk someone out of a situation, that was alien to them. You know, and that's the way we do it. And that's why they liked, you know, a guy said to me one time, he said, "I like Irish guys," he said, because he said, "They're not," "they're not gung-ho." He said, "They're not headbangers. They can talk to you. And the last resort would be, you know, sticking somebody, you know." But it was an education, you know, and it was, I finished up in that 2 years. And it was probably the right time because days were 18 hours. Some of them were 24 hours, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you could have gone, like, I'm lucky. I'd have an odd beer. It is, you know, I don't go on the tear and like that. I never smoked. And, you know, I had, you know, a good diet. I had it worked out, kept myself right, you know?
Yeah.
And it all contributed to be able to do the job as such, you know? So, but it's, I wouldn't recommend it to everybody as such, you know, but it was something that was necessary at the time. I had bills to pay and it was necessary, you know, I had to do it.
And I know you've looked after other people and there's some people that you don't want to speak about because you told me before we come on, but who else did you look after that you do want to speak about?
Well, if you're talking about gentlemen, absolute gentlemen, I looked after Liam Neeson for the Michael Collins premieres for a week. There was a couple of us did it. It was Liam Neeson and his late wife Natasha, a lovely guy. What you see is what you get. He's just down to earth. And it was Neil Jordan was the same, and he was with his fiancée at the time, Brenda. And there was Stephen Ray. Good guys, you know, just genuine guys. No demands, no nothing. Did what you know? You told him to go. We're going here. No problem. That's fine. Done. That's it. You know what I mean? There's no, but absolute. Liam Neeson was an absolute gentleman. You know, so. And I'm glad to see he had the career he had, you know?
Yeah, and if I take it away now from that, because I know you've recently retired and that, and there's one or two people that don't want to speak about, which we won't. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it back, Frank. We spoke about the current Celtic team, and I'll take it back. What early memories or what, you know, what's your favourite memories over the year following the tick?
Numbered them. I mean, ups and downs. I mean, I don't like you have to take with the time I've supported them. You've seen some good times and some. You have had some good times, some really good times, and you had some, you know, dark times. But you know that's all part of it. Nobody has the divine right to win every time. You know, I think possibly any time you win against the blue half, 6-2 stands out. You know, Boa Vista. But like it's, I take each game and I take memories from each game. And there's always discussion afterwards, and it's always with like-minded people, whether it's yourself or whether it's Hilly when he calms down. Sorry about that, Hilly. You know, and you meet people, you know, and the thing is, you know, I like it in the lounge in the Jockstein. It's people, you know, now you're not my age, but there's people there my age. I sit beside people who in the stands with Ricky and with Alan. And it was because you got me the ticket for that. Remember, you heard his son was giving up his ticket, and you said you had someone, and that's how I got my ticket there, you know. But they're like-minded people, you know, just, and they celebrate like a 16 or an 18-year-old, you know, so we haven't lost it yet. You know? So we're not sitting down, you know, with a quiet clap. They're up just as much as anybody else is if there's any injustice done on the pitch, you know. But no, it's, I like where I am. It's a good crowd, and you know, you have a good laugh, you know, and you can debate it. We can all debate it calmly, as such, you know.
So now, Frank, you're obviously getting back to Glasgow Mall now since you retired. You're also getting down to Spain, and you'll be back in Australia soon because it must be a word you would obviously see your son.
Yeah, I believe in 6 years since I went over to Neil, believe in he's 46 now. For his 40th, a kind of surprise visit. I went over for about 8 or 9 days. And since then, I had my two knees done. I had to because I didn't want to go over pre-COVID until I got one knee done in 2019 and the other one was done during COVID in 2020. And I didn't want to go before that because I felt it was a drag, you know what I mean, on him. I couldn't do what I wanted to do previously. So now I've, now the COVID's over, I'm heading over for 2 months now in December and January, back in February, you know. And España, like yourself, you know, 6 weeks and next week for 6 weeks and then September, October, 6 weeks.
So it's, yeah.
And then every 2 weeks, 2 weeks of every month in Glasgow. So you don't miss any matches, you know.
So yeah, it's definitely it was definitely the time to retire, Frank.
Yeah, I should have done it. I should have done it beforehand. But look, I was doing what I was doing, and that was it. But it's I get value now from my season books. Well, yeah. So I mean, but you're talking about I used to go over on my own when I went. Sorry, it was three of us went initially to North Stand, and then two of the lads when the downturn came, two of the lads, one went down back down to Bristol. And it was Big John, Bino, we call him. And then Neddy, who's a good friend of mine, he went to, in 2007, we went to a wedding in Adelaide, and he met his missus there, right? And in 2008, he got engaged. 2009, we were back for another wedding. And in 2010, he had his first kid. And myself and Bino used to travel together. And then I decided to keep them going. When they were away, I decided to keep the tickets going. And it was cost me, but at the time, about 1,800, you know what I mean? So, and I didn't always have somebody to go with, you know? And it was Vincent, as you know, said to me, why don't you join Margaret's? So, and he introduced me to Hilly. And Hilly said, well, I can give you a price on this. And Hilly dropped the price down, I think, to about 1,300. So I said, that's grand. And I still have two of those, and I have my own lounge ticket. But it was the best move I made, to be honest with you.
So there's a seat there for your son if he comes home from Australia, and a seat for your grandchild?
Yeah. Well, I'd expect Hilly to make sure the lounge is available. After all, he gets enough value out of my one, so he did.
I hope you're listening, Hilly. I'm sure you are.
Or not to mention forgetting Shamey there, right, Shamey?
Right, just before we wrap up, because it's been wonderful to get into your Celtic soul and get that, just get them Jerry Lee Lewis stories, because so you know it fascinates me, because I'm always
You're into the music as well.
I'm always kind of at you for more details, and there's a few stories you couldn't share on the podcast that you shared with me privately. So I'll have to wait for you to die now, so I can share them. You know, not that I'm wishing you any bad luck, Frank. Yeah. But Frank, if you go back over those years, right, but you mentioned the 6-2, which is funny.
Yeah.
I asked Matt McLoan last week what was his favourite Celtic Rangers memory, and he said that was the one. If you can go back and pick a player from over all those years of watching Celtic, who's the player that sticks out for you?
Danny McGrain.
A wonderful player.
In my favourite all-time player was Danny McGrain. Now, that doesn't devalue the rest of the players and such, you know. And but I've picked him. He was my favourite player. I'll always say Danny McGrain. You know, what'd he be worth today? The guy. You know something? A couple of years ago, I remember at half time, he was out and the players, and he was chipping balls into the box. And if anybody watched him, everywhere the ball, it went onto a head. And that's where you put, you, like players nowadays, not being able to put the ball in for a corner or to miss the first or to get stuck with not even get past the first man. That's criminal. You know, you should. You practice and put it on. And I mean, if you put it in the penalty spot and the guy's coming in, he gets above, and your chances are you'll score. And he was just chipping him, like bump, like as if it was just playtime. And that was, at half time. Remember, it was a couple of years ago. But an absolute gentleman. Like, you have Bertie, God, he's passed away. And, like, let's face it, any of the team you met at any of the dues functions, they were always gave time to you.
Yeah.
That's one thing about it. You know, and also, thankfully, Celtic look after the Lions and whatever. You know, they're there, and hopefully now those that are left will have another few years of this, you know?
Oh, hopefully, yeah. And I interviewed Danny, and I was going up to City North. It was the association that invited me up to interview their guests. And it was Jackie Mack, Paddy McCourt, Danny McGrain, I think Paul Bourne was there, and there was someone else. I forget who the person was, but Jackie was meant to be on last. Paddy McCourt was second. Paul Bourne was first, and Danny was second. And they asked me, would they put Danny last because of his legendary status? Mm. So I said, okay. But when I went to call the two boys up, they were both missing. They were both in the bar, gone to get a drink. So Danny came up. So when the two boys walked back in, Paddy and Jackie walked back in, Danny had the whole... He had the whole audience in the palm of his hand with his humour and his stories and his legacy that he carried on stage. And when I called up, I think it was Paddy McCourt next, the two of them got up on the stage and they said, "Oh, we'll do this together because you can't follow Danny." We were supposed to be on before him. And he did. He stole the show that night. He was absolutely brilliant. And what an honour it was for me to interview him as well. And he had great longevity at the club as well, didn't he?
I did, yeah. Fantastic guy, you know.
Still, you know, then he had his coaching role and he's still about the park, wonderful ambassador for Celtic.
But gee, but the guy was, you know, just a phenomenal player. He was just, what we were today, he did everything the simple way. No, nothing fancy, whatever. He's just a solid fullback. He was, you know, same with Bertie, same with all the Lisbon Lions. And they were just, see, they played, they were they knew the history they came from, and they grew, some of them grew up in it, not all of them, but they soon learn it. And that's the thing about Celtic players coming. You know, I remember we might have disagreed on this finish when Rangers went down, we should have strengthened. But, you know, Rangers had gone down for a couple of years, and if we had bought players then, they would be gone by the time Rangers came back. They would have had their exposure. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always maintained. You know what I mean? You know, it's, as I said, not everybody agreed with me, but I said, look, you know, look at the players now. If we lost a spine, and on many occasions have we lost a spine of our team. And this time we had Ayer, who didn't want to be there, and we had Edward, who didn't want to be there. Christie wanted to go, but he gave us 100% up to the time he did go. He was playing some of his best stuff under Ange. So, you know, you can't just expect overnight to replace that, but Ange has done a wonder.
And hopefully it'll be wrapped up by the shouting on Saturday.
Exactly, by the Saturday shouting on Saturday, in the story, you know.
Frank, thank you for driving down to the studio. We don't get many people in the studio because we're still doing a lot of stuff on Zoom. But it's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to getting some more stories that maybe you couldn't talk about on here on Saturday when we get a wee natter before the game.
Exactly.
But thank you so much for letting us into your Celtic side.
I hope it wasn't too boring for your fans.
Fans, no listeners. No
listeners, your fanzine. Yeah, no, I was glad. Because it had been going on. We were talking about it, you know. And I was just trying to think, you know, what would you ask me that I could answer and whatever, you know. But look, at the end of the day, without Celtic, I wouldn't have the quality of life I have. End of. The people I meet. And that's not, I'm not just saying that for the sake of saying it. It is what it is, you know.
Yeah, Celtic is certainly more than 90 minutes. More than 90 minutes, Frank.
Yeah, off. But it's just, and also I enjoyed the fanzine, and so did the people I sent it to. You know, so the.
Well, Frank, we thank you for all the support. You've been very good to us over the years, and especially during lockdown, even when things maybe weren't going well, you'd always pick the phone up and give us a call. So we much appreciate that.
I enjoyed the read. You know, so I always keep a spare one for down to Spain, so I can bring it down. You know, give it over to McGill's, my favourite restaurant down there. You know, because her son is a Celt and he's in Perth. So he gets it sent out to him, you know. So he's delighted with it, you know.
Brilliant, Frank. Folks, thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Frank Trundle for being my guest on the show today. Don't forget, folks, if you're listening on your favourite podcast provider, just hit the subscribe button. It doesn't cost anything and you'll never miss an episode. And you can also listen to the podcast on Celtic Fanzine TV on YouTube. And if you want more information, you can visit CelticFanzine.com. But you can also pick up the fanzine, subscribe, donate for a price of a pint, or buy some of our merch. We thank you for supporting More Than 90 Minutes, Celtic Fanzine, a podcast, and also everything you do for us over, especially during lockdown, because without the listeners and without the readers, well, we wouldn't have survived during the lockdown. So thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.